I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back for another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. In our final Masters series, we welcome back Tron Carter from No Laying Up, DJ Piehowski from Scratch TV, and we are joined by number one Sergio fan, the Scores, Adam Sarson. Welcome on, guys.
Hey, man.
Thank you, Andy. Sarson? So, you're alive.
Barely. But yeah, no, it's what a day. You know, I sent this out on Twitter probably about, I don't know, probably 10, 15 minutes after it was over. But like, I always thought he would win one, but I never thought it would be this one. Like, it doesn't, you know, obviously super talented. It never seemed like this was the one he was going to win. And I'm shocked that he did, to be honest. Like, throughout the first few holes, even when he was like two or three up, I was thinking, okay, well, Rose is right there, Fowler's still there, I'm sure Spieth's gonna just torch the back nine and something's gonna happen to him, but then it never did.
Yeah, you would think if you're gonna make a list, it like starts with the British Open, but you know, you have to think that those windy, tough conditions the first 2 days helped him so much get there, because you know, it gave him a nice start to the tournament where it made it just, you know, so tough for everybody. And you know, he thrives on that hard golf course, and but he
didn't make the first like what, 23 holes or something?
Yeah,
of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, he hits it so flush. I mean, I was listening to Brandel talk about it, and he was talking about his swing and how he had shallower divots this week than he'd ever seen. Which, I mean, it was true, though.
Randall's the best.
Yeah.
Do you think, man, I felt like I noticed the opposite coming down the stretch. Yeah. I felt like he was just digging on those last few holes.
He's always
digging.
He
gets some mega shuffling on those last few holes.
Yeah, awesome.
But, you know, like, I kept feeling like you kept going through your head, oh, no, not again. Because, like, you know, the shot on 10, then the bad drive on 11, you know, and then 13, he's in the weeds, and, you know, seemingly it's over. But the guy just had something that he's never had before. I mean, what do you think's changed? Is this personal life thing blown out of proportions, or is it real?
I think there's something to it. He definitely does seem like he's, you know, more at peace with whatever he's got going on in his life. It has nothing to do with Sebi, in my own opinion. But I mean, look, he's always been good enough. I think your point about the first two rounds is a valid one. He always thrives on hard golf courses and hard conditions, which is why I was actually concerned about the weekend, because it was supposed to be so much easier. And, you know, the greens are supposed to get faster, and, you know, that's just not something that he's usually all that good at. But yeah, no, I don't think anything's necessarily changed so much in his actual game. I mean, I still don't think any of us actually trust him to hit, you know, any kind of like a downhill 8-footer. Like, I don't think any of that's changed. I think it's gotta be the personal life first off. And then, you know, everything just kind of came together this week. No one really made a charge at him either, outside of Rose, obviously.
I think the best thing that I heard from him was, you know, he was talking after his round. I know he's mentioned this in the past, but like, first of all, it was surprising to hear him say that he had kind of like penciled in himself for a couple of Masters, like back in the day. He was like, yeah, I kind of, you know, I thought I would win a couple here. And then, you know, the course blew me up basically for 15 years. And, you know, he's made all those comments in the past about how he didn't like it and it was unfair, and, you know, it gets kind of quirky, and and it just, you know, maybe it wasn't his kind of place, which is kind of all the reasons, like, we all love the golf course so much, I feel like. And it felt like that was the one thing he said, was that he kind of let it all go and was like, all right, you know, whatever happens, happens. And so I think, like, in the past, he would have gotten some of those breaks. He probably would have seen some of the breaks Justin Rose got too, and just, like, completely said, all right, here we go again. It's just not going to happen. And then that leads to more misses and more, you know, more bad putts and all that stuff. And it just didn't happen this week.
I was about to lose it when I saw the ricochet that Rose got on 18. And I couldn't believe that actually happened. Yeah.
That was ridiculous. I mean, he hit a great putt there. It was so interesting that putt just stays on the edge that time. And then the second time around, it breaks. And it's just, that's the crazy thing about golf, is these little, like, nuances and moments. Like, he got that unbelievable bounce to get it in there, and then the putt doesn't move. And then second time around, it does. And I'm just, I think that I'm so happy Sergio made that putt to win the play. You know, like, it felt so much better that he didn't just lag it down there to 6 inches.
That was like an emphatic exclamation point on the whole thing. Like, it was just it was like a middle finger to all the haters out there.
And even just the way that it went, like, I'm getting too in the nitty gritty, but even just the way that it went in, we're kind of like 180 on the back of the cup and just shook. I mean, it was just perfect. It was so good. And the fact that he had so much, I mean, just so much up and down throughout the round. I mean, I feel like when you watch a final round like that, a lot of the times you can kind of identify the guy pretty early. I'm like, he's going to hold it together and win and whatever. And it just, I mean, the meter's just going back and forth all day between he's got it, it's going to happen, and there's no way, like, this is impossible, here we go again. Just so compelling.
I mean, after on 10, he basically chunks the drive off the tee. He had what, like, 260 yards left?
251, I think.
It's like, right after I saw that, and then he puts it into the bushes and whatever, it's just... Yeah, it was. I was ready to just obviously pack it in at that point, but
that play found on 10 has to be, like, among the worst spots on the golf course to try to chip from.
Oh, for sure. He hit an unbelievable
bush over the bunker, running away from you the whole time.
He got a horrible bounce there because he hit, like, one of that. That shot was so insanely good, and it got, like, a hard kick.
Yeah.
But, like, that was...
The variables of, like, how bad, like, how much he could have messed that shot up to off of the... Like, sitting up off the pine straw. Like, there's so many awful things that can happen there. Like, either...
Same with 11.
Yeah, I don't know how he did that on 11 either.
So crazy.
You know, he almost channeled a little Spieth out there with the way
I thought you were going to say
No, the way he limited damage from, like, just terrible shots, you know, like, making par on 13 was, I mean, him making that putt was so big because, you know, I think if he misses, Rose makes it and, you know, it's completely over. But, you know, that's the crazy thing about golf is there's so much little psychological things, I think.
13 is because, like, it's just so cool how much of the tournament comes down to that hole. It feels like, just from just a momentum standpoint. Mm-hmm. It feels like the last couple of years, I mean, Bubba, when he beat Spieth, like, kind of ended there this year. I mean, it just feels like that's kind of always where it pivots.
You know, this will piss Tron off is that Danny Willett last year parred 13 every round.
All right, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Then.
No, never mind. I think it usually matters, except for Danny Willett.
Why would that piss me off?
I don't know. You just don't like anything with Danny Willett in it.
I don't know. Anything about anything. Like, everything pisses you off.
It's
Danny Willett, the Butler Cabin. That was awesome to see.
Can we talk about the way Sergio played 15 all week? Because what he did, I mean, look, he obviously almost jarred it from the fairway, which I think I basically woke up my entire neighborhood when I saw that happen. But
did it hit the
no, it didn't hit the stick, but it was basically, It did?
I think it grazed it. I don't. I feel like the spin got altered.
And then it hit the stick on the way back up, but just barely, like, barely glanced it.
Yeah. I mean, even yesterday, like, you hit this ridiculous 3-iron from, like, I don't know, it was 200+, and it was just, like, it was majestic to watch that ball flight. Like, it was, like, I don't know, it just, everything kind of seemed to come together. And I was ready to pack it again on 16 when he missed that putt. And it's just, like, I don't know if I've ever actually experienced the ups and downs of a round before like this. Like, it was insane.
You know, I mean, if you think about it, he hit a decent shot on 12, right? I mean, he was what, right or left of the pin or 20 feet left or something?
Yep.
Kind of from there, he didn't miss a shot the rest of the tournament. I mean, well, besides the drive on 13.
Beside the drive on 13.
Yeah, maybe from the wedge on 13, basically.
So his, he had a perfect wedge. Worked the drive on 13, too, was just totally, like, I thought the ball was fine. I mean, the camera, like, they couldn't find the ball, and then all of a sudden they showed the pine straw, and I was like, what? Like, it's over there?
Well, he talked about that when in Butler Cabin when he was answering Nance's questions too, because he was right. Yesterday he did take the exact same line on Saturday, and he absolutely just killed the ball over that on that ridiculous line that he took. It was, and I guess I don't know. I guess he just didn't hit it either far enough or high enough and did it over everything. But it was the same line.
Why is there all this technology on the Masters app, but not in the telecast? Like, because
do you want to take that, Tron?
No, I mean, I was talking about this with Simon Phil earlier. It's like the broadcast is the last bastion of, like, I don't even know. It's just it's infuriating how opposed they are to showing anything with technology as far as the actual CBS broadcast. It's like that's the holy grail, and they can't mess with anything with that.
You know what I think is happening is that the Masters is just slowly just weaning CBS out, and eventually it's going to be all on the app, all owned by them.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, isn't their stated intention to have all...
Why would they give
shot of every player for the whole tournament, like, readily accessible?
That's my point. Like, why would they let their app have technology that a telecast could easily have and just blindly, you know, withhold that from them?
Yeah, it is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they could do that. I mean, they're like, it's not like they're locked into some CBS contract. It's like a year-to-year deal, right? Like, they can cut the cord. I don't think they have to, like, needlessly sabotage CBS in order to justify doing that down the line. They can – I mean, they're in the driver's seat with the relationship, you know?
I feel like we're getting down the conspiracy line here. Yeah. We need to get back to the tournament.
Sorry.
Sergio won the Masters, guys.
So now that Sergio's got the monkey off of his back, you know, what do you think? At age 37, he's still got, with the way he hits the ball, I think he's still got 15 years of good golf in him. How many does he get?
I think he gets a British for sure, right?
Yeah, I think so too. It's just so hard, man. It's so hard to predict all this stuff just because of the sheer fact that there's only four. Like, I mean, there's only four every year. It's like, how many, you know, if Rory won today, we'd be talking about how many Rory's going to get. If Dustin won, we'd be talking about how many Dustin's going to get. Like, there's only so many to go around for all these guys. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the issue. So, I mean, I feel like if he gets one or two more, that's massively, like, that's massively capitalizing on what happened today.
Yeah, it's just so tough with the talent at the top of you know the world right now is just it's so good. I mean, you know, I do think he gets a British at some point. I don't think it's out of the question that he gets a U.S. Open either. But I mean, it's so hard to predict. I mean, I never would have thought he would have got this one. So I mean, he has the game to win anywhere. I would be surprised if he didn't get at least one more, but I mean, I mean, are we going to be that shocked to say if Henrik Stenson doesn't get another one?
Well,
I don't think I would be
surprised if Sergio didn't win another one than if Stenson didn't win another one.
Yeah, I think Sergio, in general, Sergio's got more of a pedigree of success than Stenson does in majors in general. I think Sergio is a more talented player. Like Sergio, the thing that goes underrated with how great he hits the ball is how good of a pitcher of the golf ball he is. When I mean, like around the greens, he's probably one of the 10 best around the greens with just pitch shots. And I think Stenson, you know, he's one of the 5 best tee to green, but around the green. And I think Sergio's in a different career class than Stenson is.
Agree. And it's not like his game is going to be like, it's like as guys get older, some of them lose their putting and all that. Like, it's not like that's going to be a huge issue with Sergio, I don't think, with where, like, he's kind of already faced those demons and figured out the workarounds with those, where I think that may affect him less as we go along here just because it's affected him so much already.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, it's not like he's going from being the second best putter on tour to the 80th best. He's going to go from, you know, the 80th best to the 90th best,
yeah,
or whatever. I mean, change all that much.
Yeah, I mean,
what do you think? How many more do you think he gets?
You know, I think he's gonna get to 3 or 4 on his career. And like when you think about Sergio, I think when you look at this kind of era of golfer, you know, in that Tiger realm, you know, he's gonna be from the younger era, he'll be number 2. Behind, you know, he's got, you know, like in this kind of 10 years, if you take Rory as a younger generation and you look, he's going to be like, you know, 2 to 3 in there with, you know, Phil. You've got, I mean, really it's Ernie, Phil. It's kind of weird because he's in a different spot than Ernie and Phil. But you look at like who he's in there, like Adam Scott, Justin Rose. You know, this kind of
Rose has. I think that's a good question.
I mean, here's kind of the question I was thinking in my head is, you know, if we had a major championship at a, you know, big time course tomorrow, are there two guys or more than two guys you pick before Justin Rose in that championship? Like just blind, we're going to play a big boy golf course.
I mean, this is stupid, and I'm gonna get roasted for this, but I think I would pick Rose over Rory right now.
I don't think it's crickets.
I get what you're saying.
It doesn't make it. There's a cognitive.
Well, what makes sense? Are we saying sense, for a win, or but, are we saying for like a high?
I'm saying you need a guy to go out and earn money, like. Like, you're like the guy, it's not a crazy thing to say. I think, what is it, over the last 3 years, his relation to par is almost double as low as the next closest player in major championships. So that's not a crazy saying at all. Like, I think Justin Rose, when the chips are down at a, you know, a pedigree golf course, I don't know if they're, you know, I think DJ, him, and Spieth would be my three. You know, maybe I might put Sergio in there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with Rose, I don't have the stats like the in front of me or anything, but like, it doesn't seem like Rose has any real discernible weaknesses. You know, and I think, like, I mean, obviously, like we know the list of courses that he's won at too. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that he gets one of these before he goes too. Like, it just seems like he's a perfect fit for this golf course. Yeah, no, I don't know if I. I love Rory's game, so I mean I don't know if I can take Rose over Rory, but yeah, no, I think it's a valid question though. I think he's definitely in the top 3 or 4.
Guys, I haven't heard a single word that anybody said since DJ or since Andy listed off his guys, just because Jay Day has not even entered the conversation, which makes me so happy.
Quickly becoming
I'm just doing psych ops on you guys.
So I think that the if I was gonna say, you know, who's a guy that can go run away with a tournament wire to wire, Jason Day, Rory would be on that list. But if I'm talking like I need a guy to go out and play major championship golf tomorrow, Justin Rose is on my list. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no, I think that's totally fair.
His floor is high.
I think also that the week to week PGA Tour setup is drastically favored towards guys that bomb and gouge.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. There's something interesting about Rose that he's. I was talking to somebody about this, and Day is kind of like this too. I mean, there's certain guys that are just like, no matter where they go, they're always gonna shoot 10 under for the week. Like, it Rose is, doesn't strike me as a guy who's gonna go shoot, you know, 28 under and win at Hartford or something like that. He's one of these guys that like he just I don't know how you kind of explain it. It's just when the courses get that much harder, it's magnified how much cleaner he is than everyone else.
It's like Tron's boy Cooch. He does the same thing.
You know, he's not clean though.
Let's talk about Cooch vaporizing McRib on the back nine. That was, you know, one of my top moments of today's telecast was Cooch just taking it to the McRib on the back nine.
How about that closing speed from Coocher?
All I could think about there was our boy Huber. With that, yeah. That Mexico story. I'll let him tell that somewhere down the line, but he said he basically
the point is that Cooch is
says
much more
Cooch has this great motivational thing that he says to himself after he makes big putts and big shots. So but like just envisioning him saying that to himself it was a sight to behold. yeah, I mean he stuck it in me. He was inside of me on the entire back nine.
I mean, did you guys catch his interview in Butler Cabin when he managed to talk about the Bridgestone logo on the ball?
B on the Bridgestone. I was like, B stands for back door, not Bridgestone. So, and then somebody tweeted something like something really derogatory, like oh, like in your face, Tron Carter, and then it. Like Bridgestone liked it. Bridgestone the damn it, guys, come on.
But that's one of those things. You got to just take the good with the bad today. Oh, yeah. You got to be way in the black today.
For sure. Yeah, and then he was like ever present. He pulled a Bubba there at the end, just kind of hanging around behind 18 green,
shaking hands.
Yeah, kissing babies.
So, he was watching his co-medalist come in.
So,
I want to know what was the scene at Tron Carter headquarters and Adam Sarsen headquarters? I mean, I am nowhere. I love Sergio. I am nowhere even in the same arena as you guys.
Sarsen, lead that one off. There, I think you're the emperor of the Sergio fan club.
Were there tears?
No. There were no tears here. I'm not going to speak for Tron. I'll say this. Like my stomach was in knots for like 12 holes. Like it was bad. It was real bad. It got a whole lot worse when I saw him chunk that ball on 10. Because I just figured it was all going to come crashing down after he did that.
And not only that, but then he backed off that shot from the fairway like three times.
But that, you know, he was the pretty much all day yesterday, and through the first six or seven holes today, he did none of that.
No, and he looked so comfortable. As soon as he got to the back nine, he looked like a different human being.
He just kept backing off and backing off. It was just. It was like I was stuck watching him at like Bethpage in 02. It was the same thing. And I thought there was no way that it was actually going to happen. But then, I mean, 15 changed everything.
I thought 14 was 14 is going to go down as his most underrated hole of the week.
Yeah,
that shot that he hit 14 green was like, that was a shot where it was like, you have to know with that pin where you need to land it, where it's going to feed to. That was perfect. So awesome.
14 is such an underrated hole out there. It's so good. Yeah.
14's so good, and 17 sucks.
Dude, 17 doesn't like, suck. I like
17. 17 doesn't suck.
That's a great green. Dude, that bunker, that bunker is awesome.
Where it is, like, if 17 and 3 switch spots, I would like 17 so much more.
You just...
I think Jake Nichols was talking about it, too. I thought he said... He was saying, like, switch 17 and 8.
17 and 7.
7's the worst hole on the golf course.
He was saying switch 17 and 7, because they're next to each other.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was absolutely paranoid that he was going to miss that putt on 17.
The short one.
The short one. The first one, he had no chance of hitting. But there was no chance that was ever going to happen.
How about his putt on 15? How did that drop? How did that? It did not look like it was getting over the front edge. Yep.
No, exactly.
You're projecting your negativity onto the putt.
I'm a very
clearly going in.
I'm a negative golfer.
I think 17 is a cool hole because of a couple reasons, but like when you look at 13 is obviously super gettable. 14 is gettable. I mean, if you hit good shots, which is obvious.
You need some girth down the stretch.
15 is gettable. 16 is gettable with that pin, and 17 like and 18 is gettable with that pin. Yeah. And so they needed like you need a punch hole that like. I was saying that I was texting with somebody earlier and saying like 17's it's still a mover kind of hole just because it brings bogey into play instead of birdie.
Kind of a heat check hole.
17.
Yeah. If a guy's rolling along, like he's got to hit two solid shots in there. And I agree. It is a much better hole in person than it is on TV. They don't capture on TV, like it's such a high point on the property, and you know that's a cool green, but
you gotta hit two primo golf shots there, and that front bunker is death. That's one of the hardest shots in golf because you get that back pin.
Get it up so fast, and you gotta get it all the way to the back.
It's like you can't blade it because then you're gonna make double. You know,
I thought Rose hit a really good shot out of that bunker. Like, and it just did. It was still 12 feet short or whatever it was. Like,
Or somebody say like this is not a hard golf shot or something.
Yeah, they're like that's not a bad spot to be. Easy bunker shot.
Yeah,
that's circle back on your question.
18's so good.
I had tears. There were some tears.
It was just like, he was so just unvarnishedly, like, ridiculously happy. It was just awesome to see anybody like that.
He really had an instant reaction to all of, you could tell immediately if the shot was good or not.
Usually that's a problem with him because usually like he does that little groan face or whatever it is that he calls it. Yeah, exactly. He does that after every shot, and it doesn't matter if it's good or not. He does it after every shot. But today, no, it looks like he was chasing after pretty much every good shot he hit.
Yeah,
every shot he hit was good down the stretch.
Yeah,
it's true.
I don't know. It's the Masters that. Back nine, I think that it just shows the how nice it is that they're every year it's hosted there because everybody knows the back nine and it you know the players know it and you know there's this just you know the casual fan knows it because they watch this tournament every year it always seems to deliver the goods you know for the most.
I know I'm going to sound like a PGA Tour shill here, but that's the same reason that I think the Players has gotten so good as well. Seriously, like it's awesome for a lot of the same reasons. Like the fact that you know all the holes and that's a place that like they have turned, you know, whatever. We're not here to talk about the Players. We can save that forget it.
It's all right. You can get your plug in.
Yeah, it's the same reason why the President's Cup really took hold those first few times too. You know, they played it at the same venue this first couple times around, and it really just captured people's hearts.
Yeah. So, you know, not to weigh this conversation down, but, you know, a couple guys had a little bit more disappointing of a Sunday. So Spieth and Ricky, lots of hope coming in, lots of words wasted by sports journalists everywhere on Jordan, and just a tough day. I was in on the Ricktator, and you know, I felt the burn.
Yeah, I was ready to lay the house on Jordan this morning. I was completely wrong.
Yeah, I was ready to do the same with Ricky. Like I didn't, you know, I didn't see it with Spieth. I don't know why. It was weird though. Like I've never seen him have such bad speed control on his putts. He wasn't hit anything. It was that he wasn't particularly close to hitting anything at any point today. It was really bizarre.
I think Shipnuck said, I think it was him, tweeted something that was basically like it had the look that like he had just burned so much energy trying to get back to four under where he was that like today he just looked totally spent and like he just didn't have anything.
Well, and nobody really there wasn't really a big opening at any point where. Like, it felt like, I think if Rose would have really struggled on 7, 8, 9, but, like, when a lot of those guys, and Spieth was already out of it by this point, but, like, more so Ricky and, like, even Casey and Peters and those guys, like, if Rose would have stumbled on 6 or 7 or 8 and given him an opening while they were on,
yeah, you
know, 11, 12, 13, 14, like, that would have been huge psychologically, but I think he made those three birdies in a row and just kind of closed the door on them being legitimate contenders in that.
Yeah, I don't know if it got them to a point where they had to press too hard too early, yeah, or something. Jordan was pressing obviously the whole time, but
yeah,
I don't really know. It was sad, mucho sad.
I feel like Spieth, so he, you know, he was really calm after he made that nine. He kind of just was just going about golf. He was just golfing, and then all of a sudden he got into contention on, what did he do? He made that birdie on, what was it, 13, and then he birdied 14 yesterday on Saturday. And then on 15, you know, you saw him just like something switch, and he became like that really talkative Spieth where he's like, you know, getting at Greller, getting at his ball, you know, and just a different mentality. And then, you know, he hit that great shot on 15, but didn't close the door, and he gets so like OCD almost over, you know, stuff in contention, but I don't know, he's still great. I mean, his track record, even with this T11, I mean, he played awful and still finished 11th, so I'm sure he's got to be considered, you know, him and Rose, and you know, him and Rose probably are two favorites next year, and DJ.
Yeah, unless he, you know, somehow falls off a cliff and doesn't play well the rest of the year, I don't see how he's not the favorite to win next year. I mean, he seems to. I can't remember who I said this to the other day, but it's just like Ben Crenshaw. Honestly, like it feels like he was made to play this course, and I don't know what happened today other than it's just, you know, one of those things. Like he just had a bad day. You know, again, his speed control today was so bad, and it just seemed like he backed off a bunch of putts at least early. I don't know how much they didn't show a bunch of them towards the end, but at least early on, he just didn't seem like he was comfortable at all with what he was seeing.
Mm-hmm. So, do you guys what do you guys think about Rory moving forward at the Masters? You know, it's kind of once a course that you thought he could never lose at until that, you know, kind of epic implosion. And now it just seems, you know, he just can't, it's not, you know, he's got the game for it. It's just, you know, whether it's the short putts, is it, you know, the short putting? Because that's what I think, you know, Sergio did so well today was limit damage. And, you know, he, you can't give away shots at Augusta, like, and then magnify
mistakes.
Yeah, but
I think the putting, I don't think the putting was Rory's issue this week. Like, it seemed like he never got comfortable. I mean, he hit some big-ass drives, but he never got comfortable with, you know, kind of that drive you have to hit with taking a little bit off of it and just getting it in the fairway. Like, he never seemed like he just got in a rhythm at all. He was just
I agree, and that's kind of what it always seems like with him. There is, I think it is a putting thing, because I think he kind of, like, this is a very intangible way to look at this, but it just seems like he misses a lot of, like, momentum putts. Like, he'll get it going, he'll stick it to, you know, 6 feet for a birdie and a miss, and then it just kind of just feels like all the air goes out of the balloon and it just never gets it going. Whereas speed kind of feels like the opposite, where it's like, you know, it just, every time he needs to make a 7-footer for par to keep momentum going, he does.
And it gives him more energy versus taxing on Rory psychologically. Yeah.
That's what it feels like. I don't know. Something was off.
I don't know. Every time I saw someone tweet out, like, a photo of, like, Shot Tracer today from, or even yesterday from, like, the Masters website, it was always like, Rory just hit, like, a 375-yard drive, and it's like, oh, well, he made bogey. And it's like, well,
right, yeah, exactly.
You know, like, I don't know if it's, you know, again, he wasn't shown at all today, it seemed like, on CBS. So it's kind of hard to tell, but it's not really a secret that he hasn't really been, you know, hitting his wedges all that well. You know, it's something. I don't know. I don't know if he needs to, just like Tron said, if he needs to kind of take, you know, dial it back a bit off the tee or whatever it is. But I still feel like his game is still too perfectly suited for this course not to win it. Like, win it at least once.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to click. I don't know what it takes for it.
I mean, how old Rory?
He's
27.
Like, yeah.
I mean, I don't expect him to be somebody that plays deep into his 40s, but at the same time, like, we're still relatively, you know, like, technically he's just entering his prime.
Yeah.
So,
but at the same time, you see, like, what happened with Sergio. I mean, Sergio has, you know, almost as much talent as anybody in the world, and he came into golf, like, with these high expectations. But that's what I'm saying.
Rory's won what, four majors?
He's won three, right? Or four?
Four.
So, you know, I don't know. You get in these droughts, and golf's a different kind of game where it's not reactionary like basketball. It's not reactionary like football, where, you know, like, you're making these split second decisions with no time to think. You've got time before every shot, and it's a crazy little game in that sense, where weird things happen, bad bounces happen, bad breaks happen, and, you know, you can play a hole great and make par. And
I guess the argument for him not winning it is something to the effect of, well, Greg Norman was perfectly suited to win it, and he never did either.
Yeah.
I wasn't born when Norman was really going through either, when he was trying to win it at his peak. But I mean, it just I would be shocked if he didn't win one. I really would be.
Yeah.
Sarson, can we talk about your boy Hadwin?
what about him?
He had 7 birdies today.
He is a freakishly good putter. Like, he is so good on the greens. I mean. I don't know. This does not seem like a course that he could ever win on. But I mean, he's a stud, man. He's the real deal.
He birdied three of the par fives today. But then he birdied 7, 8, 9, and 10, which is pretty solid. You know, and I mean, he had a couple doubles earlier in the week, but this was his debut, right? This was his Masters debut, right?
Yep.
So, and he was the only Canadian in the field besides Weir.
Mackenzie Hughes too.
Oh, Mackenzie Hughes. Okay.
Who are you putting all your stock in on of the Canadians? Is it Hadwin?
Yeah. No, it's Hadwin. I mean, to be perfectly honest, like, I still think Graham DeLette has something there if he can figure out, like, he's still a good ball striker. He just needs to figure out what he's doing around the greens. I mean, he's, I mean, there was the, he pulled out of a tournament last year because he had the yips. I mean, that's, I mean, if he can figure out around the greens and with the putter, I think he can still be something. But Hadwin's the guy for sure.
What about that Corey Connors kid? Seems like a player on the web.
Corey Connors. There's Taylor Pendrith just absolutely mashes the ball. It's getting better. There's no doubt about it. I don't think, you know, we're not going to be filling that President's Cup roster anytime soon. But I mean, it's getting a lot better. That's for sure.
Let me ask you this question: would you say that this is the Mike Weir effect?
Jesus.
I'll say this: like people, like I can see Tron just laughing right now. But you know, if you talk to, you know, golf courses and whoever else who are in, you know, people who are in the game, the two things that they always point to are obviously Tiger having the impact that he had in the late 90s. But Mike Weir actually playing well for that, what, 4 or 5 year stretch from like the late 90s into 2003, 2004. But he got to number 3 in the world. And it actually, like, he did have a big impact on golf in this country for sure. If you talk to guys like Hadwin and Hughes, they do mention Weir quite a bit as obviously a big influence. I mean, they still usually mention Tiger first, like everybody else would, but he's definitely had a big influence on the game up here for sure.
Yeah. No, he's, I mean, I bang on Weir a lot, but he's
really,
yeah, obviously he had a few hot, really, like, historically good years there. How many more majors do you think he has, or sorry, how many more Masters do you think he plays in?
But before he gets the letter?
Yeah.
I mean, he actually didn't play that bad this week. I mean, he had
in the cut, wasn't he?
He was close to the cut.
Yeah, he was flirting with it.
He was flirting with it for a little bit. I'd have to look it up. He shot 79 on Friday.
Larry Mize just earned himself like 10 more.
He avoided
years.
The big number, though. I don't think he didn't have a single double.
I mean, look, if they let Larry Mize play forever, I mean, he's done well the last couple of years, but there was that stretch there too where he didn't do anything. I mean,
one of my favorite things about this year is that Fred Couples is 57 and Larry Mize is 58. And everyone looks at Larry Mize like he's 89 making the cut.
I kind of miss the days of like Charles Cootie and like some of those guys going out and shooting like 88, 89. Like, there's something that just kind of demented about it. But
what would Gary Player shoot in this course today from the back tees?
God,
95.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say.
I was telling you guys the other day that I had a buddy, Tom Alter, friend of the pod. Played with Gary Player at his par 3 course in at Big Cedar Lodge, Tron's place.
Oh, the rock, baby.
Alter's like a 2 handicap. I mean, he's a stick, and yeah. Gary Player beat him.
Wow.
I mean, granted, that was like a Gary Player, Seth Rainer signature design, though, right?
you guys want to talk about Westwood rising to the occasion today?
Shut up.
You know what? You already got torched by your, you know, Westwood just being in the thick of it all week.
He was never in the thick of it. That's the point. He did exactly what I said he was going to do, which is like hang around and cash a huge check and never, ever, ever be, you know, a factor.
You know what?
He beat the most underrated player in the world by 7 shots, though.
That's true. Hey, everyone's got a bad day, man.
Did he beat Phil? He beat.
Oh, probably Phil.
He beat Phil.
Yeah. Well, after Phil had lost his chance to win, he packed it in. He didn't care.
I think Phil was just trying to stack up Crystal.
So
yeah.
So Sergio's out as best player without a major. Westwood just is anchored in on one of those spots. But who else is up there? Like, is Kuchar a legitimate case of best player without a major?
He has a case, I guess. I mean,
no, because he doesn't play well enough in majors. Like, he never can. He never actually can.
This is his third top five at Augusta.
Yeah, but like,
and he won the Players. He won the Players.
He didn't get to. Oh, he won the Players. He won the Players. Come on,
the best field in golf.
He's won the Players. He's won the Memorial. He won a playoff event. He won the Match Play, I think.
Yeah, he's got a WGC. Like,
he's a stud, Tron. Despite your,
I mean, Poulter won two WGCs.
Ranting.
Yeah. So, you know, is it Ricky now?
It's gotta be the Rick Taylor, right?
Yeah, it's well. So that was my question then. Like, is there, so statute of limitations? Obviously, like, Westwood was the guy. He's gone at this point. Is it too early for, it's too early for Rahm and Peters then? Like, you can't
you can't be playing like your first time around certain venues and be the best player without one.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're being technical here, the best player to not win a major is probably John Rahm. The best player in the world to not win a major right now is probably
What about Matsuyama? He's in there, you know? Paul,
yeah.
Casey doesn't win enough. Man,
Ryan Moore.
There kind of isn't really like a bona fide outside of Westwood. Westwood's the only one that you're like.
No, they're all knocking them off. I mean, look at who the last major winners were: Sergio, Jim Walker, Henrik,
DJ.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Patrick?
Westwood, Aaron Hills, baby.
Yes.
Can we talk about Patrick Reed missing a cut again and still not having a top 10 in any major that he's played?
It's that hard draw, man. I can't play a hard draw.
I beat that one to death on the No Lego pot earlier. Just
I've told Solly so many times that Reed is basically just the American Poulter, and he hates every time I say that.
Yeah. All right, going back to Kuchar. Kuchar has zero second-place finishes in majors. One third place finish, three top fives, all in the Masters. He's played in 45 majors. He has 18 top 25s, one top three. And out of all those majors, I don't think he's ever, there's been one Masters that I can remember him actually
having a chance.
Having a legitimate chance.
They had a chance, they missed a really bad putt on 15, I think.
Yeah.
But of the players, like, I feel like he's the only guy that, like, you know, it's too young to put that pressure on Ricky at this point, you know, of like he needs to win, you know.
How many majors has Ricky played in?
I don't know. I mean, he's probably played in since 23 times four, so he's probably played in 20 majors. It's like,
that's a lot of majors.
Well, if you win in 5% of your majors you played in, you'd be one of the greatest players of all time. You know.
All right, he's played in 22 or he's, no, he's played in 29 majors. Ooh. Made 22 cuts, and he's got 2 seconds, one third, and five top fives. So, I mean, granted, most, you know, the majority of those were in 2014. Which was a transcendent year, and he really hasn't done much since then. But yeah, Ricky just never really got it in gear this week.
He never hit. He was hitting it terrible. He was like
just a slow simmer.
Yeah, I think it's 7 putts.
He was 42nd in strokes gained approach going into today, and then he hit one green in the first six greens. I think he had hit four greens by through 12. So, you know, got to hit greens to make birdies and come from behind. It's especially with Sunday, the pressure. But yeah, Patrick Reed, I really believe that he's got to ditch the draw to contend in majors, because it's hard to hit it close when the greens get firmer and firmer and pins get more and more tucked, because you're coming in with overspin. And I think he's got to get a little bit more neutral of a ball flight. Like, Ryder Cups, he's great because the setups are extremely easy and set up to make birdies, you know, middle flags. But I think Reed's gotta get a more neutral ball flight.
That's a strong take. I like that.
Think about DJ. He started
totally. All these guys.
Yeah.
Sergio, Stenson.
Faders eat filet.
Will DJ Fade work it against it, though? That's the question.
I don't know that he needs to necessarily get rid. Like the type of draw that he plays. Like he slings it all over the place. It's such an extreme draw that I don't know. I'm also always like a little wary of guys who just like, okay, well, I'm just gonna try to hit a fade now. Like it's not like, I don't know.
It takes a lot of work to get rid of
a such a veiled insult at Kiber.
Well, it's not veiled at all.
Subtweet. Let's say this real quick, by the way, when everybody writes their previews next year about like having to hit a draw at Augusta, let's look at the guy that just won.
Yeah.
Real quick. And the guy who finished second.
And the guy who finished second. And the guy who's won six times.
Yeah. And I don't know.
That's one of my least favorite takes.
You look at that leaderboard, almost all of them were
only
to be
replaced today by should they move the Sunday pin on 16.
We talk about that take
for a second?
Who
said that?
Golf Digest.
Golf Digest.
You want to take that on, Trump?
I don't think it even deserves words and time, to be frankly honest. You know, what was better, today or last year's Open Championship? Stenson-Mickelson duel.
It's Stenson-Mickelson for me. Like I was very happy to see the result today, but I mean, I don't, from a pure golf standpoint, I don't think I'll ever see anything better than what we saw last year at the Open.
I think it was today. I think today for me, just because I knew the course so much better and you know what's going on and you know where the misses are and all that stuff. And like, it just draws you in so much more. And I feel like Sergio is just such a better, he's a better main character, I feel like.
I'll qualify that. The story today is better. The story today is better. The actual physical golf was way better last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were making like long putts last year too.
Yeah.
Like they were,
that's true.
Like they were draining everything.
So I kind of was thinking about this. I kind of like that about today, that you had these two dudes who just ball strike the cover off the ball.
Yeah.
And it's so dicey on whether they're going to make putts or not. That was so fun to watch.
Yeah, because you're worried on every like 3- and 4-footer with those guys. I mean, exactly. I guess Stenson, I felt that same way with Stenson all last year through that Open Championship. Every time he had a 4-footer. The thing that was good about today was it went all the way down the stretch. I mean, you know, that Stenson-Mickelson thing when he hit that iron on the par 3 that I thought he, like, pull-hooked by the way he reacted and just handed the club to the caddy, but then it lands, like, 8 feet away. It was over then. But, you know, today...
I think the only thing they could have made today better was, and I know I'm kind of contradicting what I just said, but the only thing they could have made today better is if it was Sergio winning the Open for his first major. I don't know why I feel like so much. It's just so much more his style, I feel like.
All right,
that's why I think it's the opposite, though, because it was never supposed to be this one. Like, if anything, it was never supposed to be this. Like,
kind of like Phil winning British.
Yeah, like, and I mean, look, today, like I said it earlier today too, but like, at least on the front nine, it seemed like there was one player who was actually hitting good shots, like. Rose, until about the first 7 holes or so, it seemed like Sergio was the only one consistently hitting good shots. And then it was basically just Sergio and Rose the rest of the way. Like, every other guy that was supposed to contend today basically faded. And so, like, I don't know. It was a weird day. The story today is amazing. But, yeah, I still think last year's was probably a little better.
So, all right. So, what's your prognostication on the next couple months for Sergio? Does he just go into, like, laid back shots of relaxo mode, or does he
he just
does he try to keep the momentum going and parlay this into something
I don't know. Andy, have you been to Erin Hills?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the look there?
I don't want to compare it to Chambers Bay. But I played it like 8 years ago, so you know, it's been a while and they've done some changes, but it's really long. It's like 8,000 yards from the back tees. it's like stupid long.
Like a blast.
And it's
one of the things that was most impressive today was how Sergio drove the ball. Just how he just drove it out strong today.
He was hitting it far all week too.
So far. Yeah.
I don't understand how he has that much lag and he gets that much roll out of those drives. Like
they were just going forever.
Yeah, I mean like the ball would just anybody else in the world, like you just have that kind of lag and get that steep on it, even drivers, and the ball would just balloon on you.
Yeah.
He rotates, so. Man. Rotates. Lag and rotate. But from here, you know, what do you think as we go forward? Like, is anybody going to watch the Heritage, or is everybody going to have a big hangover?
We're going to the Heritage. DJ and I are going to the Heritage.
Yeah,
we'll be on the ground.
Yeah, I'll be boots on the. I love the Heritage, dude. It's like the chillest week after the cauldron that is the Masters. And you're just hating on, you know, you're hating on the RBC, you know, the Royal Bank of Canada. Here,
you know who's prime
right in front of Larson.
Who's prime for a win next week?
Cooch.
McDonald?
RBC ambassador Matt Kuchar.
Oh,
fresh off the
last
top five.
Time, the last.
He already won on the guy called for TBC Sawgrass.
The last time that I stepped foot on the grounds at the Heritage, Matt Kuchar hold out on the 18th hole. That was the last shot I saw.
Was that when he made the bunker shot to win?
Yeah. But the bunker shot that would have gone like 40 feet past if it didn't hit the pin.
Man, it did. Shoot, man.
Well, hey, if that would have happened to Spieth too, if at the deer, you know, he may never have gotten his tour card.
Water, yeah.
So, you know, that's why
it's a guaranteed player, man. The more you practice, the luckier you get, right?
I've heard Gary Player's name like 10 times too many lately.
Well, you know, I hope you extend the olive branch this week.
No, I think Kuchar and I, we're going to have, at some point down the road, we're going to have some sort of summit and hash out our.
I need to be there for that summit. I really do.
I feel like, you know what? I feel like the page has kind of turned already. I feel like Tron knows it's inevitable that eventually he's going to become a Matt Kuchar fan. But he's already in too deep. It's like the Civil War. He's already like, he's already chosen his side and he can't go back on his word now.
I might, I'm going to get embroiled in some sort of bet sometime where I'm going to be forced to wear Kuchar's, like, Skechers for, like, a year.
And then you're going to notice how comfortable they are, and you're just going to just keep going with it.
And then I'm just going to say, yeah.
Walking 36.
I'm going to play another, another 18.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Should we play overrated, underrated? Close this thing out?
You guys. You guys want to do overrated, underrated?
I thought that's the fried egg staple.
We'll do three. Truncated version. We'll get it out of here. All right. We're going to start off with, has Thomas Peters gotten overrated?
Ooh. Darson, you start.
No. Not at all. He's a stud. He's I can absolutely see him winning this tournament at least once, and I would absolutely think, from what I've seen about Erin Hills, like you can't be surprised if he actually goes out and wins that thing in June.
Yeah, I'm gonna say underrated.
Yep,
guy is just a phenom, the Belgian Rom.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'll never go overrated on him. That was a terrible one.
But that was a chair. Yeah.
Hey, we'll go with Jimmy Walker, sneakily top 20 this week, despite having mono.
It mono. I missed that.
Yeah. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So overrated, underrated, Jimmy Walker. Tron, I feel like you are ready to go on this one.
I'm gonna abstain. I have too many nasty things to say about Jimmy Walker.
I don't want to fall into a trap of saying everything's underrated, so I'm gonna say overrated on Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, like he's the perfect guy, that one time major winner like Keaton or Duffner, and I mean he's a good player. I don't know. I think for the next 2 years he's going to be an overrated player, and then I don't know what that means going forward. But it's I don't know.
I think he's kind of, we were talking about guys earlier who, you know, the regular PJ Tour schedule is just so conducive to these guys who bomb and gouge and are a little sloppier and a little kind of, you know, just not as tidy, not as major championship. I know full well that he won one of the last two majors, but. The point still stands. I think he's the guy that goes out and shoots, you know, 26 under in Hawaii and wins those events.
Yeah,
can we talk about how long his legs are? Every picture I see of him, his legs are just super long. Crazy.
He hits it far, man.
Yeah.
He does hit it far. All right, Masters food.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Are we going to make a distinction on it, or just say and just lump it all in general?
We're going to lump it all in. It's
cable TV. We're just trying to start a fight. Lump it all in together. I'm going to say a little, a skosh overrated.
I think the egg salad sandwich is underrated, but the pimento cheese is so overrated that. It drags everything else down with it.
I like the pimento cheese. I'm in on it.
I've never been, so me, I can't really
me either.
I can't really comment on it. I mean, pimento cheese, doesn't sound like it's something for me at all. I know Shane Bacon's probably gonna kill me over that, but yeah, it's not for me.
I hear they put bagged milk in as the base. They use so that cheap.
That would make it so much better. Like, you have no idea.
So last one. It's going to be a twist. What's the most underrated stretch of holes at Augusta?
I mean, 13, 14.
Three holes? Are we talking, like, three holes? Or, like...
What you can put... You could just... Three... We'll say three-hole stretch. Underrated three-hole stretch. So, you can't say... Amen corner. That's not underrated.
I was gonna say if I had to pick one, I think it's 1, 2, and 3.
Like I
love the first hole. Like it's so so like it's so difficult. I don't know.
That was awesome to watch on Thursday and Friday. Just watching guys get ejected from to start their day.
And then, like so two good. Like two you should have. You should have a chance to get at least one back, and then like a potential, you know, yeah, no, it's 1, 2, 3. Like I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Oh, so I was gonna say 3, 4, 5, just because yeah. I feel like people, I don't know, I feel like 2 is properly rated. People give it its due. 3 doesn't get a whole lot of attention. 4, but I would say 3, 4, 5, but 4 just kind of, I don't know, 4 is too long now, and it's just the hole doesn't play as it was. Intended to be played, I don't think. But 5, I think 5 is one of the most underrated holes on the course.
That green is
complex,
so awesome.
Is awesome.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I don't, this is an amen corner one, but 13, 14, 15 are like three of the best holes out there.
That's such a bad take.
You guys have already covered it, though. I'll tell you, 6, like, 7, 6, 7, 8 is the worst.
One of the top 2 or 3 best par fives in the world. Number 15, one of the top five or six best par fives in the world, in my opinion. And then 14's a great hole.
There's like literally no other stretches I could have said that you guys didn't already touch on. So that's fine.
And you're trying to stay away from 7, because 7's like a...
No, well, that's what I was going to say. 6, 7, 8 is the worst stretch on the course.
Yeah.
It's, I was going to go 1, 2, 3. I think 14 so underrated. No bunkers. Awesome hole. I think 17's underrated. I almost said 16, 17, 18. But I don't like 6. Hey, did you guys see the old pictures of 16? The greens?
Yeah.
Sweet. With the
crease. Unbelievable. I was reading an article today that I almost lost like all hope for society. Golf WRX did an article, an interview with Robert Trent Jones Jr.
Your boy, just in the tradition.
It was called like looking at Augusta National through like binoculars, and it talked about how they were the royal family, and then he was like talking about the changes they made, and they're like, so yeah, we wanted to make. Instead of bunker, you know, bunkers were supposed to be car crashes, so we decided to take out bunkers and put ponds in. And, you know, just like everything that's wrong.
You guys
with
see
it.
Those pictures on Twitter yesterday? The guy was
putting the bunkering stuff?
Yeah.
They're sweet.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. Somebody DM'd me, it made a good point. If they went to that bunker style, the golf course it couldn't be so perfectly manicured then.
Yeah, there's a disconnect. Yeah. That's what threw me off, was that mixed with, like, the azaleas and, like, all the flowering. And like it.
Yeah, but how cool did, like, 12 look, where the bunker just goes up into the hill?
Oh, that was amazing.
It's awesome. I love it. It's just, that's what, it would be a weird juxtaposition to have that and, like, perfect everything else.
Yeah, they'd have to, like, overhaul the whole vibe, and that's not going to happen.
Rob Collins, $45 million.
We're stuck with the ice cream scoop bunkers.
Yeah, they should take out all the pine stuff. Make it all sand. Also,
Andy, can we talk about the pool?
Oh, yeah. I looked at it a second ago. Some guy won. We got to come up with best names.
some guy.
You heard it here first.
Congratulations, some guy won.
Let me see. The guy, his picks were really good though.
You know who finished high was poor ass obstructed privates.
where my man Queef Boy
finished? Queef Boy, I think, took a big tumble on Sunday. You know, I found another good one.
The moment was too big for Queef Boy, I think.
Yeah, so we got, it was Tyler Harper, Kansas 13-1. Let's see where Queef Boy finished.
That was my favorite name part, just because there were so many names that were trying so hard to do something witty. This dude just rolls in with Queef Boy.
Queef Boy went from like 32nd to 932nd. He got ejected on Sunday.
Kind of the William McGirt of the pool.
Yeah. There were some good ones. I was a big fan of Tiger's Call of Duty squad.
Yeah. How did we do?
He was doing good, but...
No, how did we do?
Yeah, we. Like you.
Oh, I got ejected. I was up in the high... Let's see, Solly finished 464.
Solly thought he won. He was talking on the podcast earlier. Like, he was like, dude, I think I won. I was like, no, he didn't.
He DM'd me and asked me, am I winning or something like that?
You didn't even have the winner, dude.
Romulus and Remus came in, you came in 5,790th out of 6,000 entries.
Who was that? Was me?
TJ.
And a lot of those entries probably had Dustin Johnson in them, right?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's hard to compete when you don't have somebody from the good guy category.
And then Tron, you came in 4,500.
That's not that much better.
The weekend was not kind to me.
No. You would have been higher up if you picked your boy Cooch.
true.
I thought about it, but I...
I came in 3,000th, and then, Sarson, did you do an entry?
I totally forgot to even enter. No. Believe
Sarson's
me.
Sarson is queef boy.
I wish.
All right. Well, hey, great Masters. We'll have to do this again for, I guess, the U.S. Open. We can talk about how many bogeys people are making, and you know.
Hell yeah.
That sounds great. We got another pool. I need to avenge my badness.
So
we should probably do a pool for the players too,
just to make DJ happy.
Love it. I'll see you guys down there.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna
come strong with the President's Cup update too this week. See who's lined up to make the squad.
Oh, I forgot that's your. Is that your thing or Solly's thing? You're gonna get just super into the President.
I'm gonna get the President's Cup's my baby.
Adam Scott stacked up some points this week.
I don't think Adam Scott wants to play in the President's Cup.
Charles Schwartzel.
You know, Adam Scott will, because he gets to stay in Manhattan for a week. He'll be like, oh, you know, I gotta chum it up in Manhattan. You know?
Yeah, he's pretty worldly. You're right.
You know,
he'll probably.
There's also a big ass unit.
What about Hadwin?
There's also a Uniqlo outlet in Soho that he'll probably go hit.
The flagship store, I think.
Yeah, I think it is.
All right. Well, we're out. Thanks for coming on. And great Masters. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us. Fun week.
Sarson, congratulations, man.
Thanks, man.